There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
Thank you to Scamfluencers for sponsoring this episode. What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. Bevin Lannis is a mother, survivor, and victim advocate from New York. Bevin joins us today to share about her daughter Megan's journey, as well as to bring awareness to domestic violence. In these two episodes, Bevin candidly shares about the immense trauma Megan was forced to face in her youth and the harmful path she was launched down as a result. Devastatingly, Megan's young life was stolen on October 23, 2021, after experiencing years of violence. In the wake of her loss, Bevin has made it her mission to advocate for victims by amplifying what she calls Meggie's voice. The Broken Cycle Media team is eternally appreciative of Bevin's honesty, advocacy, and her desire to change the future for those who experience violence at the hands of a loved one. This episode is dedicated in loving memory of Megan Kiefer.
The surgeon, two nurses, and the detective came in, and they come over and they tell me her heart wasn't beating. They tried to resuscitate her. They were sorry that they did everything that they could, but that she was dead. I texted my siblings. My friends drove me home a couple hours later. Then I had to tell my kids. Megan's killed on Saturday night. My sister Karen dropped everything. She had two young children. One was 2 and one was maybe 4. She drops everything, leaves him with her husband, and comes down here to help me navigate this. My son and my husband were coming home that night. Monday, we have arraignments and we go to the funeral home. Karen came to court with us on Monday for the arraignments. She went with us to the funeral home Monday to make the funeral arrangements. And my other sister is blowing up my phone. When my daughter was killed, I had called her ex-husband and told him first because he has their children. And I wanted him to know before his kids saw it on my children's social media page. I didn't want them to find out that way. And I remember her asking me why I told him before I told her. It's because he has the children. And I really didn't have an obligation to tell her. And she's blowing up my phone for information on the services, and we don't have them yet. And she's making it about herself. It's almost like you don't want me coming to the services. Give me a break. Like, my kid was just killed. We didn't even know what we were doing yet. We didn't know if we were having an open casket, a closed casket. Tuesday, we had to go identify her at the morgue. My sister, she was like, well, what was it like identifying her body? What the hell do you think it was like? I identified my daughter in a black and white photo. because that's what they do here now. You don't go in anymore. And then as she walks into the funeral home on Friday, I told her, you can bring mom, but you guys can only come for the first session. I do not think it's in mom's best interest in health, and I don't have the bandwidth to deal with her. So I don't want you here tonight, just this afternoon. Crystal clear boundaries. You can come 10 minutes before the public so mom can have time alone with her, because I know that would mean something to Megan. So I really did what I thought my daughter would want. So she walks in, she had her moment with her, but then they came back that night. So like they could hold court in the back corner of the funeral home. There was no respect for boundaries when it came to us and Megan. So the levels of trauma that came with this are very deep. I work for the county prosecutor in the county where it happened. I was reassigned a new advocate halfway through. I didn't know anything about a lot of things until a week before the trial and the day before the trial. That was hard. The trial was going to start on Monday, May 1st. That Friday afternoon, they had my husband and I come in, and we met with the prosecutor, my advocate, and the detectives. They just let us know who the witnesses were going to be. The lead detective on the case forewarned me, this is going to be very hard. You're going to get very upset watching this, because they made a compilation video that they were going to show at the trial or at closing or something like that. He had a dash cam camera in his car, and when he fled the scene, it turned on. It was about an hour and 29 minutes of him calling people and telling people what he did. On the camera, you hear him saying that he stabbed a bitch mad times, bro. You hear him saying, oh no, I meant to do that. You see him fleeing the scene, and he almost ran her over when he backed up. That was how they got DNA on the outside of the car, because of her blood splatter. You see footage of him disposing the car and getting in somebody else's car. They record the interview, and it was quite disgusting. He kept asking how the dog was. He never once asked how my daughter was. The detective had mentioned that in the interview. Like, I'm a little concerned that you haven't asked about Megan. And then I got to ask questions. I had questions that I needed to know before I heard them in an open courtroom, because we have to remain composed. We can't break down and be hysterical in the courtroom, because they can make a motion for a mistrial. At this point, I still did not know how many times my daughter had been stabbed. They told me 10 at the hospital. At arraignments, it was 40. But that was before they had conducted the full autopsy. So I asked how many times she had been stabbed, and that's when they told me 54. I asked what her cause of death was, and that's when they told me she bled to death. There was no blood in her chest cavity. When I read her autopsy report, I had to read it a couple of times because my brain was protecting me. The first time, I'm like, I don't understand how any one of these wounds was fatal. But then I went back and read it again. He stabbed her and pierced her skull and hit her brain twice. The level of rage that goes into a stabbing and a strangulation is very scary. Monday, May 1st, the trial starts. They call the 911 person who does the validity of the 911 tapes. Her friend had called in because her friend had been there. And then they have what's called an MCAT officer, who is a medical police officer. I don't know the exact term, but he's trauma level trained. So he responded to the scene. He was the first one to assess her and start her treatment, and he stayed with her until the end. He talked about what he saw when he got there, about the time she coded for the first time, which was the exact moment that I had jumped off the couch. He talked about the hospital ride and doing CPR, but then as they're doing CPR, every time they do a compression, now blood's pumping out, I think he said, on her arm. So they had to tourniquet her arm. We took a break after that witness, and then the trauma surgeon testified. They cracked her chest open, and there was no blood in her chest cavity. After the first three witnesses testify, we took a break for lunch. The jury left, and the jurors were crying. At that break, they asked for a plea deal. They asked for 20 to life. And we were like, absolutely not.
Scams are everywhere. On your phone, in your inbox, even on your television screen. Looking at you, Tinder swindler. What is it about scams that has pop culture so obsessed? Or maybe it's because we're all deeply fascinated by the psyche of someone who can lie with ease, cheat with no guilt, and convince the world they are who they say they are, even when they're not. Scamfluencers is a weekly podcast that takes you into the world of deception, sharing the stories of today's most notorious scams, like the recent episode of Natalie Cochran, the pharmacist femme fatale. It seemed like she had it all, a good job, loving husband, and two kids. But behind the scenes, Natalie was scamming friends and family using fake contracts, fake government emails. She even faked cancer. But when the walls start closing in, she'll do anything to keep the lie alive until someone ends up dead. Listen to Scamfluencers now, wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to Scamfluencers for sponsoring this episode.
At that break, they asked for a plea deal. They asked for 20 to life. And we were like, absolutely not. The max sentence in New York is 25 to life. So you have to do the minimum of 25 before you're eligible for parole. But you get credit for the time you're in. So he would already be getting like a year and a half credit. So we're like, no fucking way. And we come back. And as we're walking in, there is my mother and my sister. I don't look at them. I don't talk to them. Because at this point, the trial's continuing. They weren't giving him a plea deal. I was worried about my mother's conduct, and I had relayed concerns about how she's going to behave. And the court officers were notified just to be careful in case there's any outbursts. My mother's 82 at the time and frail, and she's on a walker, and she probably doesn't even weigh 90 pounds. She actually stood up when they brought him back into the courtroom, like she thought she was going to intimidate him. I remember hearing one of the court officers telling her she needed to sit down, and she's like, I'm allowed to stand up and stretch. It was just craziness. We come back from lunch, and the defense attorney was like, is there a deal? The prosecutor was like, no, we're ready to go. And they bring the prisoner in. He says something to his lawyer. I didn't hear it, but my husband heard it. And he's like, he's asking for the maximum. He asked them to plead guilty to 25 to life. And I firmly believe it's because the next thing being introduced was the dash cam recording. And he did not want that in. At this point, it doesn't make a difference. I think he thinks he has some mastermind plan to keep it out. He pled guilty. They allocated on the record. On this date, did you do this? On this date, did you do that? They established the relationship between the two of them, that Megan broke up with them and he was mad about it. And he was kind of like, well, yes and no. Just being cocky and arrogant. Then they talk about they found him on the bus in Chinatown. He was looking to flee, to go down south. I remember he made a comment that he wasn't fleeing. He was going on a much-needed vacation. That comment stayed with me. We do something here in New York called a pre-sentence investigation, where probation does a historical intake on the defendant. Then we go to sentencing May 31st, 2023. He did not want to be produced at sentencing. He waived his right to appear. The prosecutors made it an application to have him produced because we had a courtroom full of people there for sentencing. In New York State, after the victim speaks, the defendants get the right to speak. So we read our impact statement, and then he gets up and he speaks. And I laugh because for someone who didn't want to be there and he waived his right to be there, he had like three pages written out. And I knew he was going to say things about me and my relationship with Megan. Because he only knew the perspective from her when she was mad at me. I never once said our relationship was perfect, but my daughter always knew I would be there for her. So he spoke. He paraphrased Malcolm X. He tried to say he was being wrongfully prosecuted for being a Black man in Suffolk County. And mind you, he had asked for this sentence and that he did what needed to be done. The only people who should be sorry or her parents and her fake-ass friends, that he was going to leave the courtroom with his head held high and his middle finger held even higher. The judge was enraged. The judge told him it was the most disgusting thing he's ever heard. And he said to the judge, well, it's not for you to like. They went back and forth at it. the judge was like, that's it. I don't want to hear another word out of you. I'm sentencing you to 25 years to the rest of your life. Get him out of my courtroom. I had this urge to throw back at him what he said at sentencing. So they're walking him out of the courtroom. And I said to him, enjoy your vacation. And he was all mad. And he's like, I will. I remember in my head, I thought, oh, my daughter never told you about what I'll do for my kids. So I said it again. Enjoy your vacation. I see it's pushing a button. And he's like, I will. I'll be back. And they're pushing him through the door. And I said it again. And then they closed the door. It sounds petty, but it felt so good. Like, fuck you. Enjoy that vacation. I hope it's miserable. He thought he was smarter than everybody, but he wasn't. A couple of months after everything was done and settled, in October of 23, I had gone up to Albany for a lethality assessment presentation, a two-day seminar from the New York State Office of Prevention of Domestic Violence. I knew he had a case up in Albany County, so I went over to the court and I requested to see the file, and they gave it to me. During the review of the file, I noticed that he had had crimes in 2008, 2010 in Brooklyn. So I sent a FOIL request to the Brooklyn DA's office to get information on that case. It included strangulation, assault, kidnapping, endangering the welfare of a child, and they had called me wanting to know what it was I was looking for. I explained who I was and what he had done to my daughter, and now I want everything on him because the system failed. I need to know exactly where the failures were because I can't push for change without knowing what the failures were. They had said something to me that I found quite gross. They said, you know what happens when a victim is difficult and they don't want to testify. I remember saying to them in response to their comment, it was a rape and a strangulation. You have medical records. You could have prosecuted the case without your victim. And their response to me was, but what if we got an acquittal? And I said to them, that's basically what you gave him, an acquittal. It took them a very long time to respond to my FOIL request. And going through that FOIL response, I learned of other charges from 2006. That case was pled down to a disorderly conduct. So going back at least 15 years before he killed my daughter, he had been committing acts of violence against women. And never once was he held accountable by the system. They always let him go. Every time they dismissed and sealed a case, they emboldened him. We all know now with lethality assessment that strangulation is a huge indicator of fatality. But I think it's an indicator not just to that victim, but to anybody they date afterwards. So they might strangle one victim but not kill them, and that victim might be able to get out of that relationship and be safe and not be murdered. In my opinion, and I'm not a professional, if they strangle somebody, they're capable of killing anybody. It's not just limited to that victim. And when the system keeps letting these perpetrators go and sealing these cases, there's no way for women to know what these men have done because you only know what they tell you. You don't know the truth. It's just why one of the things I want is a domestic violence registry. I know some states have recently passed one. I believe Tennessee is one of the most recent states to pass one. I know people have concerns about how you're going to do that. I like the idea of similar to a sex offender registry where you have a category 1, 2, and 3. There's a lot of resistance to it, but I think it's doable and it's needed because these men also move. They travel. And I think women need a way to be able to check. I do know that men are also victims. It would be anybody who's a domestic violence abuser would be required to register. Our state has, if you abuse an animal, you can be forced to go on a registry. If we can do that for sex offenders and we can do that for animal abusers, I don't see why we can't do it for domestic abusers. We don't know what we don't know until we know it. And many times they start with that love bombing cycle and you think they're fabulous. But if you had the opportunity to run their name through a public registry, I think most would.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
We have other laws in our state, so we have this thing called clean slate. If someone has a criminal record and they stay out of trouble for a certain amount of time, their record can be sealed. There are some exclusions to that, and most of the exclusions have to do with sex crimes. I want domestic violence crimes excluded too. The other thing we have in our state, they changed our discovery laws a few years ago, and they also did this thing called raise the age, where there's certain rights that defendants are afforded based on their age. For example, a defendant can be arrested and charged with strangulation and convicted, but because of their age, that conviction can then be sealed. I don't think domestic violence crimes should be sealed under that statute, and I don't think sex abuse crimes should be sealed under that statute. One of the things I want is education in middle schools and high schools and colleges. I think it's important to show them at a young age what the warning signs are. If not for them, then somebody they know, because statistically, everybody knows somebody. We have to protect ourselves because no one else is protecting us. Laws need to be drafted and some current laws need to be amended. The hard part is getting politicians to listen to you. Nobody wants to touch these bills, and I don't understand why. I don't want any other girls to go through what she went through. I don't want any other families to go through what we went through. The irony in it is 29 years ago this month, my childhood best friend, her brother was murdered. He was stabbed to death. And then in May of 2007, my husband's cousin was murdered in California, and he was stabbed to death. People like this just doesn't happen. It's happened in my life 3 times. I can't save the world and I can't change the world. But if sharing Megan's story can just help one person, then it's a great thing. My daughter, who's 23 now, within the past year, she asked me why I didn't do these things when Megan was alive that I do now. And I said, I did try to help my daughter, but some of the things that I know now, I didn't know then. And when Megan was growing up, these things weren't talked about. We didn't have the education and the knowledge we have now. I would rather not know anything about domestic violence. I'd rather have my head in the sand and have my child alive. I'd rather be fighting with her. But that's not what happened. Everybody handles things differently. Everybody grieves differently. Everybody goes through the process differently. And for me, trying to help prevent others from going through it is what brings me peace. When I was at the conference for Crimes Against Women in May, one of the common themes that they had said is that these deaths are predictable, and if they're predictable, they're preventable. Megan's death was completely predictable once you look at all the factors that came into play, but the system failed. I wanted to share the failures in the system because, to be honest, nothing's going to change here in the system until they're held accountable, because it's not going to get better until there's change. more women and men are going to die. More children are going to die until there's change. I do talk about domestic violence a lot. It's what I live, breathe, sleep, and eat now. I think some friends who I've lost touch with, understandably, it was too heavy for them. But I've made some great friends who, you know, we can turn to each other, support each other, brainstorm off of each other. Predominantly now, I talk with parents who've lost a child to homicide, more specifically domestic violence, but I do have other friends who've lost their children to other random acts of violence because no one understands what we're going through except those of us who are going through it. To have become friends with Nicole Schmidt, she's the one who connects me to a lot of people. I actually sit on the board for the Petito Foundation. They brought me with them to the conference Crimes Against Women last year and helped me make a lot of connections in this space. The irony in it is that Nicole and Jim had actually lived about 10 to 15 minutes away from us. We both have a lot of same interests. We would camp at the same places, possibly could have been at the same time, who knows? But we would never have met if our daughters had not been murdered. They were murdered 7.5 weeks apart. You don't want to say it's nice to know you're not alone because that sounds horrible, but it's comforting to be around people who really get it. You find other people who know what it's like, and they're your safe space. We seem to all have gone down the same path for wanting change and accountability. There's just so many of us. I've mentioned Nicole, and then there's Angela, who's Rebecca's mom. There's Chrissy Kennedy, who's Brenda's sister. Bruce, whose daughter is Abby. There's just so many more. Mariah Gardner is a DV survivor. The husband tried to kill her and her other child, but succeeded in killing Willow. And Willow was a baby. I feel like my daughter was there to welcome Willow. I think that when other people are passing from the same thing, especially people who are younger than she was, that she's meeting them and she's welcoming them. I went to a medium thing, a fundraiser this week with one of my friends. We were both disappointed when we were done. Her mom didn't come through and nobody came through because I recently lost my father and I lost my stepmom right before Megan. There was a raffle for door prizes. So I'm digging around in my wallet and then I pull out my ticket and the last four digits were my daughter's birthday. She sent me a sign. So now I keep the ticket in my wallet.
Oh, wow. Do you have any words of advice or encouragement or wisdom for anyone that relates to your journey in any way?
The one thing I tell people is to remember if you're not sure if a situation is abusive, is that people who love you will never, ever want to make you feel bad. They'll never want to make you doubt yourself. They won't want to make you cry. They won't want to hurt you. People who love you will just want to lift you up and support you.
I'm wondering if you have any nonprofits or resources or organizations that you like to point people to that need them.
We have some great organizations here on Long Island in Suffolk County. We have one called The Retreat. We have Long Island Against Domestic Violence. And then we have ECLI Vibe. I actually am the president of the Survivor Advisory Board for ECLI Vibes. And we have a memorial fund set up there for Megan. The funds there in her memorial fund are used to help victims in emergency situations, whether it's emergency hotel or transportation for counseling services, transportation to the agency. They do a lot of great things. So those are the three primary organizations out by me. Not every one agency can service every single person's needs. Sometimes there's a limit on resources and sometimes they might not have them.
Thank you for that. Where can people find you if they want to reach out or they want to support?
I'm on Facebook at Meggie's Voice. Meggie's Voice. My TikTok is mostly videos about her. It's Meggie's Voice also on TikTok.
I am so deeply sorry for everything you've had to navigate with Megan and without Megan since her loss. And it breaks my heart, but I am very grateful that we have you in the victim community because You are clearly a fount of strength and positive change.
Thank you for all that you're doing to share these stories. They're so important to hear.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
I remember looking in the mirror and being like, holy crap, that just happened. I told my one roommate and the two of us ended up literally Googling, what do you do after you're raped? And then we just went through those steps. I went to the hospital. I did the rape kit process. It's such an invasive process, but the nurse I had was such an absolute angel. At the end of the rape kit, she asked me, would you like me to call the police so you can report, or would you like to just go home? That binary option of report to police or do nothing at all. I've done trainings now with sexual assault nurse examiners, and most of them share that they have never learned about restorative justice. It's my hope that nurses and all of us really can be educated on additional options like restorative justice.
Thank you to Scamfluencers for sponsoring this episode. Listen to Scamfluencers now, wherever you get your podcasts. What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.